Well, hello and welcome to Local Matters. My guest today is Dr. Pat Bagley, Special Assistant to the President, Director of the Oakley Sustainable Agriculture Center, and Professor of Agriculture at Tennessee Tech University. Pat, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be anywhere inside on a rainy day like this.
It's raining today, and we don't know that it's going to be raining on the day that we actually air this, but it's certainly raining on the day we're recording it. So we're excited about you being here. And we got a lot of educational matters to talk about. But you've been here a while, but not everyone may know you. So give us a little background on yourself.
Sure, and I appreciate being here today. It's awfully nice to be here in Cookeville. We've been here a little over 12 years now. It's been an exciting time. We have loved our time here. I was born and raised on a dairy, beef, cotton, and timber farm in northwest Louisiana. Spent some time at LSU and Virginia Tech, and have been here 12 years. Came as when they combined the schools of nursing, agriculture, and human ecology. I was the founding dean of that, and that lasted about 6 years. Now they've separated back out again. And I always think my favorite story about it is I'd have people in nursing ask me what in the world I knew about nursing, other than my mother being a nurse and my oldest daughter being a nurse. I'd tell them, as an agriculture, I'm in animal science, and a lot of our curriculum, probably a third of it, deals with animal health issues. And it's fascinating. They have the same types of diseases that we do. In fact, most of the things we do in human medicine start out in animal medicine. So most of the antibiotics we have start out. I used to have fun with when I was dean, I used to have fun with the nursing candidates for professors that would come through. And I always asked them what an ultrasound machine was originally built for. You know, now we know about it. It checks the size, age, health of the babies, and this kind of stuff. We had one when I was at LSU at an experiment station in 1980, and my two children were born in 1980 and 82. They weren't using them in humans at the time. We were using them in animals, and the reason we used them was when you go in and buy a steak in the grocery store, the price is based on how much intramuscular fat is in it, whether it's prime, choice, or good, select. So once you process that steer, you can't fatten him up anymore. He's done with. So the ultrasounds were originally designed. We could scan cattle and decide whether we need to feed them more or not. It had nothing to do with humans. It's like many things that there was a use for it in animals. It turned out to not be anything detrimental to them. I'm sure Bub and his buddies one day were scanning some carcasses and says, well, heck, if this cow's pregnant, let's just check and see if we can see a fetus in there. And so a lot of these things started by accident. A lot of things are done. Almost all antibiotics we use in humans were started out in animals because, obviously, if I make a mistake and kill a baby pig and a mom has 15 of them, it's not that detrimental to the industry. But we certainly don't want to fool around when it gets into humans and those kind of things. So a lot more testing in animals.
Well, that's sort of interesting to know how some of those things started. Now, you've got a PhD. What was your PhD major or your doctoral major?
My work is in animal nutrition, particularly forage-animal interactions. And, of course, that's where a lot of the cattle are born and raised and grazed in the United States is on a forage background. Tennessee has a nice situation with lots of different types of forages, kind of in that transition zone between the colder north and the hotter south. So some of those grasses grow back and forth. Tall fescue, if you look out, we're in the middle of winter right now. If you look out and see anything green right now, it's probably tall fescue, which was planted from coast to coast back in the Dust Bowl days of the 30s. And it was the only grass that could pretty much cover 75 or 80% of the United States that was planted. And it's a little odd because the reason it's so tough, it's got an endophyte, which is something inside the plant, a fungus, and it produces a toxic compound. And essentially does not let cows, deers, rabbits overgraze it. And because of that, it's been healthy, but it also is detrimental to livestock from that standpoint. When they eat too much of it and graze it too close. The worst study, the most demonstrative study I ever saw was at Auburn University with horses. They had 11 pregnant mares. This was in April, May. They're supposed to be foaling. They had them on infected tall fescue. Only one of those mares had a baby that was born alive and lived. Some of the mares were agalactic, which means they didn't milk after they produced a foal, so the babies would die. I think it was four of the 10 that died. One of the things that tall fescue does, it thickens the placenta. And the babies were born and could not get out of the mare's placenta, and they suffocated on the ground. So it's got lots of problems. It was cattle, it's not quite as bad as horses, but we try to manage around that through lots of different things and adding things. So it's always a challenge, but it keeps, I always love biology because the answers are different almost every day. What worked yesterday does. It's kind of like raising children. What worked with the first one's not going to work with the second one, as you know.
Well, that's speaking of children and students, you work a lot with undergraduate students and graduate students too. But for the undergraduates, what do you see as the future for their work in agriculture? Are they still going into the kind of jobs they went into in the 70s and 80s?
It's an interesting question. Thanks for that. It's of course, the job market is evolving. It's much more technical than what it ever was before. There's lots of jobs out there. The estimates are that every year there's about 60,000 jobs open up for someone with a bachelor's degree in agriculture. And to put in perspective, we'd graduate about 27,000 graduates a year. So we're only filling about half the jobs that come out there. So there's lots of things that are out there. In our area, one of the problems we run into, a lot of those are elsewhere. And as you know, if you're a national company, one of the last things you want to do is hire somebody in his hometown, because the first time the boss chews him out, of course, he gets mad and quits because he lives at home with mom and dad, and they're going to pet him. If when you move to Minnesota and the boss yells at you and you've got a car note and a house note and all those other things, you just can't walk out and quit. So most of the companies, they want to move you somewhere else, but they'll bring you back once you show to be a good employee. But there's lots of good things out there. Poultry is one of the big industries out there right now, and Tennessee is one of the largest states. I think we rank sixth in the nation. A lot of business in there, and everybody thinks they get in the poultry business, think they're going to be feeding chickens, which is not it at all. A lot of nutritional kind of things, lots of management, lots of breeding. In fact, most of the genetic stock of the entire United States, over 90% of it is produced here in the Tennessee area, particularly in Crossville, Tennessee. So it's a major, major aspect, and a lot of science that goes into it. The Department of Agriculture here in Tennessee has been great to lure those companies in. So it's been fine for us. And chicken, one of the things, Bob, that you get into the United States, the world keeps demanding is affluence. As an economist background, you know this. As my income gets better, the first thing I tend to do is improve my diet. So I go from eating soybeans and lettuce to steaks and chicken, you know, those
kinds of things. Amen.
Yes, I do too. So what we've seen is there's already been about an 8-fold increase in meat consumption over the last 50 years. It's supposed to double again. If you look around the world, who can produce twice as much meat on the existing land for us? And about the only people that can do it is the United States, because the Midwest United States grows corn better than anybody in the world. We grow the heck out of corn, just all kinds. Problem with it is, though, humans don't particularly like corn. Now, we eat a little bit of it on some tortilla chips and things like that, but we really don't eat much corn. Cattle love it, chickens love it, pigs love it. So we market our corn through our livestock, which is why all the feedlots started. Was we started that as a way to market our corn, because we produce way more than we can ever produce, ever we can do. We even came up with a scheme to turn some of it into ethanol that we can put into cars. Right. So about 10% of our gasoline is in ethanol. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not. But the nice thing it gives us is the human population continues to expand and increase. At some point in time, we'll start to get into the point where we're having trouble with corn, and we simply would quit putting it into gasoline and then starting to feeding more animals. And chickens are the success story of the world. If you think about when I feed an animal corn, it produces amount of gain. But a beef cow, I usually don't put them on feed to about 850 pounds. So I feed them to about 1350, and their conversion rate is only about 6 pounds of feed per 1 pound of gain. A pig is about 2.7 pounds of feed per 1 pound of gain. And those chickens, Bob, those chickens are 1.7 pounds of feed for 1 pound of gain. So the normal 6-pound broiler only takes me about 10 pounds of corn to produce.
That's pretty amazing.
It is just shocking.
Well, this is Local Matters. We are talking to Dr. Pat Bagley, former dean of the School of Agriculture at Tennessee Tech and director of the Oakley Agriculture Center. And Pat, we talked about jobs a little bit. Some ag students also go into jobs like managing a tractor supply company store, or yes, work in insurance or other things related to farming, but maybe don't get out on the land itself as often.
And, you know, if you look around, particularly here in Cookeville, a lot of our bankers have a background in agriculture.
Well said.
A lot of those loans and all start out there, and it's still, when you talk about agricultural loans, you're talking about a lot of money. And I've done a lot of study abroad and travel abroad. We can talk about that later on. But if you think about it, if I'm going to put in 1,000 acres of corn and it's $250 per acre, a banker has to have pretty deep pockets to have that kind of money. I've gone to some countries, Belize comes to mind immediately. There's probably not that kind of money in the whole country. So not only are they always going to be thwarted by the fact that there's just not that kind of cash, once they produce it, and I was in Belize, it was my first travel abroad I went to, and Bob, we were sitting in a restaurant, and I love fresh squeezed orange juice. There's nothing in the world better than fresh squeezed orange juice. We're sitting in the restaurant, I look out the back window, and there's an orange grove out there, and I can see that there's pulpy oranges on the ground. It looked like they just picked them a week or so ago, and I'm sitting there just wringing my hands, just excited about what I'm getting ready to go to. So the waitress walked up, and it's an English-speaking country, and I told her I want some ham and eggs and a couple of glasses of fresh squeezed orange juice. She said, "Sir, we don't have any fresh orange juice." And I said, "Well, I see the orange trees right there." And she said, "Oh, but that was last week. They had no refrigeration to keep that." So it tells me about infrastructure that they have fresh squeezed orange juice when they've got oranges. Mm-hmm. The week after they have the orange season over, they don't have anything. So having refrigeration is an amazing thing. But the part that really scared me was we were driving down the road. It was a dirt road. It's the main road from the central part of the country to the southern part. The road was probably 10, 12 feet wide. It was a gravel road. We turned around the corner. There was a snake stretched across the road. And the snake was longer than the road was wide. And I told our driver to speed up. And he said, "I might make him mad." So we stopped and let the snake cross the road.
Snake might have taken out the car at that point.
He could have. I think of that movie Anaconda when they pick the car and shake it. So we didn't want to be part of that tragedy, did we?
I don't blame you. Yes. Well, we are talking to Dr. Pat Bagley. This is Local Matters. And, Pat, we're going to take a real quick break. Now, you also, Pat Bagley, serve as director of the Oakley Center at Tech. And you and I have a longstanding relationship with Mr. Millard Oakley. But talk about the Oakley Farm and what projects are involved there today Talk about the donation of the farm to Tech.
Well, it's a tremendous asset. The value is well over $10 million, the largest donation that Tennessee Tech has ever gotten. And I distinctly remember the first time we were having the groundbreaking ceremony for the nursing center. And I was standing, you walked up and you said, "Pat, I've got somebody I need you to meet." And I said, "Oh, who's that?" And you said, "Millard Oakley." I said, "What is a Millard Oakley?" I learned pretty quickly, very great guy. He's been so much fun to be around. He made the donation with a desire that he wanted students up there, and we're having more and more students up there. So it's a large cattle operation. About the third largest cattle operation in the state of Tennessee, about 600 head of mama cows. We expand that. We've gotten a lot of tomato production, greenhouse production up there. They put out, I think it was 5,000 tomato plants last year, and of course, at 10 pounds of plant, that's 50,000 pounds worth of tomatoes that were up there. Millard has been just as good a goal. His thoughts always for the students. He's talked from time to time about building a small dormitory up there so students could get a feel for it. And I guess I always thought the reason he wanted to make the donation was he understands the importance of managing land, managing agriculture, and to be good stewards of the land that we have up there. And right now I'm teaching a class in pastures and forages, and we're taking one of those, and the constraints the students have is that they're supposed to, it's about a 500-acre tract, and they're supposed to put the various types of forages in there, have it where the cows can move around. There's two large ponds, and I'm making them fence those ponds out so they have to have solar panel waterers to pump the water out to feed them elsewhere, because cows in a pond, they spoil the water and reduce the amount of oxygen that's available, so you end up with fish kills. So what they're supposed to do with those two ponds is they're going to plan a house site, and they're also going to have a place in each of those two ponds. One's going to be a trophy bass pond. The other's going to be a trophy brim pond. They have a hybrid sunfish brim that gets up anywhere from 4 to 5 pounds in about 5 years, but they're hybrids, which means they don't reproduce. So they have to set up to grow those things, feed them. Catch what I'd like to do as part of the catching. There's also,
I started to say, I'd like to stick in there some afternoon.
It would not be bad.
Wow.
It would not be bad.
I bet. We're going to take a quick break. This is Local Matters.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Well, welcome back to Local Matters. This is Bob Bell, and we are talking to Dr. Pat Bagley of Tennessee Tech University, and we've been talking about some fascinating projects up at associated with the Oakley Farm. But, Pat, what are some of the other research projects you've been involved in?
One of the big ones we've got going on right now, it's kind of odd. I'd like to think that when you're a scientist, you have a prepared mind, and you're willing to try to reach out and do things that aren't very obvious to you, but you react to things as they occur. So what happened to us a couple of years ago, one of our employees got into some financial trouble, and we have about 600 head of cows, or in roughly six herds of 100 cows each. He knew he did a hard inventory in June of every year. So about September, he started going into each of the herds once a month and stealing a cow and selling the cow on the black market. And, of course, if there was 100 cows there on Friday, and there's only 99 cows on there Monday, most of the time you don't notice that. So he was smart enough to only steal one animal per herd as he rotated through. Unfortunately, apparently his problems got worse. And one Saturday night, we had this group of 60 replacement heifers that are all these nice black heifers, all about 1,000 pounds, and he could only load eight of them on the truck, and he stole eight of a sick herd out of 60. Well, wow. You notice a group like that missing. And on top of that, thank goodness for us, he drove to the next door neighbor, who was a elected public official in Overton County, and pulled up in his university truck and the university trailer with his university shirt with his university name on it, and pulled up to the guy and says, "I need to sell some cows here. Pat Bagley told me I could sell them, but I got to get cash, and it's got to be done today. What will you give me for the cows?" Well, obviously everybody knew something was wrong, so he ended up going to jail over that. And I met with several of the faculty on campus. We got computer science involved and engineering involved. I met El Sawi, great friend. And we were talking about working through this, and I met with the assigned group of students to work with us on this. And I remember the first time I met with the students, they said, "We don't know anything about cattle. Just what do you want to know?" And I said, "Well, that's really easy. Anytime a cow goes 60 miles an hour, I want to have an alert sent up that tells me something, because they don't usually go quite that fast." So we've been working on that project for a couple of years, and there's really been a lot of nice stuff going on about where we track cattle, we keep up with the food they eat, and these kind of where they are. I've been invited to make a invited speech over in Spain last summer. There's another one coming up in Baltimore here in a few weeks. So it's been a really nice thing, lots of students. But it talks about how together there's lots of things we can solve. Because
absolutely right.
I told them it was nice that they didn't know anything about cattle, because my problem is I think I know everything and can't learn. But then they come up with they'll come up with a bunch of ideas, and about 80% of them are kind of wacky, but 20% of them I would have never thought about.
But a great educational opportunity for students who weren't thinking about learning anything about a cow.
Yes. But it's all the technology that goes into lots of things like that, and it's great training for all of us to get involved with this thing.
Well, that's a great story, and there are stories like that all across the campus where an engineer actually finds out an interesting opportunity in nursing or in one of the other fields. So great educational opportunities there. Well, you mentioned earlier Belize, and I know you've been involved in the past in some study abroads program. When we come back, we will talk about study abroad for a moment. This is Local Matters, and we are talking to Dr. Pat Bagley of the College of Agriculture at Tennessee Tech University. And welcome back to Local Matters. We are talking to Pat Bagley. And Pat, are you still involved in study abroad and trips like the one you mentioned in Belize?
great that you asked. We just got back from Mexico, and we had been to Dominican Republic the year before. Some really great learning experience for the students. They get to see how other people live. It's quite challenging. I usually have two or three or four guest speakers come in and talk about their lives and the issues that they have and what they think of America and these kind of things. And it's truly eye-opening. I think the biggest shock that I personally had while I was on this last one, one of the ladies who co-owns the hotel we stayed in, I asked her to talk about women's role in society. In Mexico, we think about a very patriarchal society where the male dominates everything. And it turns out their federal government now mandates in any federal government job that it has to be half men and half women at the same pay level. Something far past anything we have. And it's also strongly encouraged in the private business sector that there's going to be equal pay and equal numbers of people in the private business sector. They're not there yet. Supposedly, they say, and this was a lady telling us, but in the government section, they are equal male and female and these kind of things. So quite eye-opening how far some countries have come to push those things. But at the same time, I would tell you, they told us their minimum wage is 105 pesos a day, which is just over $5. So the pay level is not what we're experiencing, but it was a fascinating situation going in there. I think I had one of those gotcha moments down there. I still think about it. We were in Dominican Republic, and I had some students. This just happened to be nursing students. We had six rows of students. They were walking between the rows, and they gave them out pencils, then papers, then books. And the last three young ladies that just happened to be nurses were giving out candy. And as they walked by there, I stopped them about halfway to make them come back, and they looked at the children. They all had these odd looks on their faces. And the student says, "What's wrong with those students?" I said, "Well, look at them. You gave them candy that's in a wrapper, and they've never had candy in a wrapper before. They didn't know to take the wrappers off." So the young nursing students had to convince those Spanish-speaking children to open up their mouths so they could stick their fingers in there, take the plastic wrapper off, and put the candy back in, then bright smiles all around. So I think we all were impacted by just how poor some of these children are.
It's a bit of an educational, eye-opening experience, isn't it?
Very much so. Very much so.
Well, what are the you mentioned you take nursing students, so you've got agriculture and nursing. What kind of students go on study abroad, and what kind of challenges, you've mentioned a couple related to poverty. What kind of challenges do they face?
Language barrier is not nearly as much as what you think. We always make it a point that at least one of the people that goes with us is fluent in Spanish. And you know, if you can get your bus driver to get you to the right place, and I tell the students to take a pad of paper that the numbers sound differently, but they write the same. So if you're negotiating for a hotel room, you write down 300, that's 300 to the Spanish, but it's 300 to you, but it still writes 300. So they realize it's not as tough to get around and do things. And a lot of what it is they just got to be willing to try. And of course, most of the ones that want to go are adventuresome in spirit anyway. Fortunately, this last time out of the 18, there were 5 males and 13 females. The last time I had 17 females and 1 male,
wow.
Which is, we always have a lot more females that tend to want to go. And I think what it is we have to start recruiting so far out. The ladies just make their minds up. Men like me tend to be a little slower to convince them. By the time they decide to go, the slots are all filled up because you have to buy tickets and put names on those tickets 2 months in advance. And I don't think a lot of the guys have thought that far in advance like I didn't at that age either. So, but it's fascinating. About probably half the students have never been on an airplane. 2/3 have never been out of the country. And the ones that have been out of the country most of the time has gone to Cancun. And I tell them they've only been to South United States. That's not like a foreign country. So
yeah.
It's a different world out there, transportation, all these kind of things, and the food, and enjoy the food because it's really good down there once you get used to it.
It really does give them an opportunity to get out and experience things they'd never see here on the tech campus or here in their home state. So,
and compassion for other people.
And it gives them a great chance to serve.
And lots of people in Cookeville have helped us out immensely. Our Sunday school class that you're a member of usually makes a donation of gifts or toys or things like that. We'll usually go to 2 or 3 orphanages and some schools, and we'll give out books and pencils and paper and things like that. So our students get to see what those schools are really like, because they think we don't have a lot of them in our schools. When they see that a lot of them don't even have paper to write on, it really is an eye-opener
right.
for them.
And I've been on trips in Mexico where even some of the local students, the Mexican students that joined our team, had never really experienced a barrio. They'd driven by them, but they'd never seen poverty and experienced it. So sometimes it's a great opportunity to teach even at the local level.
I think they appreciate their own lives a lot more once they get back and they've seen how some people really are poor.
Amen. Well, it is it's a great experience to get them out, and again, a great educational opportunity. So, Pat, it has been great to have you on Local Matters. We have been talking to Dr. Pat Bagley from Tennessee Tech. And, Pat, thanks for being here today.
It has been my pleasure.